So what's wrong with this Marquette basketball team? Can they make it to the big dance? Can they make it to the big dance with an asterisk? We'll see if that happens in the conference tournament play, because some of those teams may be opting out. All that ahead and more on Championship Blue. Championship Blue.
And Marquette has won the national championship.
Go research how many schools have a national championship. It is hard as can be to win one of those suckers.
Championship Blue with Kevin Wells and Brian D.
Last time I looked in the dictionary, my name's Brian D. What's your name?
Brian Fantana.
Brian?
Kevin attempted to try out for the team before figuring out the media was where he belonged.
Man, not that great at basketball, guys. Not that great.
Two Marquette grads from two different eras.
Trying to avoid the upset. Blue the draw on the left hand. It's good. 1 second to play. Vander Blue has put Marquette in front by one.
Howard step back three again. And again. He drills it. He's got 50.
A team of Marquette guys talking Marquette hoops.
A team should be an extension of your personality. And my teams are thoroughly obnoxious and arrogant.
Championship Blue with Brian D. and Kevin Wells on Wisconsin On Demand. Well, Brian, it's great to talk to you this morning. Well,
what friggin' day is it? I don't know. Days are just like a social construct now. Since March 13th, 2020, days have ceased to exist in my mind. We just like walk through life and do stuff, and life is just a series of events between Marquette basketball games.
Well, I heard on the radio this morning, too, that this was 1 year ago today, Mahomes and the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, which is kind of crazy. So we're already 1 year away from the Super Bowl. Super Bowl coming up this week. But we got a lot of college basketball to get to, and it's not a great conversation. Let's be honest here.
Let's get to the college hoops, though. It's a better conversation than me, thinking about that son of a bitch Patrick Mahomes just wrecking my Buffalo Bills in the AFC.
Is that the first cuss on the championship podcast?
Yeah, we live online, man. I don't want to cuss a lot, but yeah, you can get away with that. I think you can get away with that on the radio.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, we're good. Let's transition to Marquette basketball to college hoops. It's been a difficult couple of weeks for the Marquette Golden Eagles, Kevin. I think I owe you a coffee based on our coffee bet from last time around. I was sitting pretty through the first couple of games of that coffee bet because Marquette was off to a hot start of the five-game stretch. For those just joining us, we bet coffee that Marquette would go 5-1 or 6-0 over the course of Georgetown, Connecticut, Providence, St. John's, Georgetown, DePaul, Providence. They had some winnable games, and obviously a couple of those games got postponed. Villanova did, Georgetown did. But the last three games, DePaul at home, at Providence, and then home to St. John's, have just wrecked Marquette's season, for lack of a better way of phrasing it. And now we are tasked, Kevin, with figuring out what's wrong. What's wrong?
And is it too early to say that their season's done? Because it just seems like 2-4 in your last six, losing on your home court twice to teams that are lower than you in the conference. I mean, it just seems like this team can't catch a break offensively. They get themselves down early. They get into a huge hole. The last two losses have been carbon copies of each other, right? I mean, yeah. They get down early. They score less than 40 points in both first halves, make a little bit of a run in that second half, but it's just never enough because you don't have a guy who can close games.
So I'm not ready to answer your question to say that the season is entirely over because, of course, when the conference tournaments roll around, you at that point are three wins away from an automatic bid in the NCAA tournament. Now, obviously, that's a heavy, heavy lift if you play the caliber of basketball that you've been playing over the last 2 weeks or so. I mean, it's just you would be hard-pressed to bet on Marquette winning three games in a row, especially against, you know, quad one opponents at this point in time. The frustrating part is that we've seen this Marquette team look really, really good. Like, there was a stretch against St. John's at home in Marquette's last game coming out of halftime where they looked like a top 10 team in the country. I mean, they were clicking offensively. The energy was there defensively. It's there for spurts, but it's not there for a full 20 minutes or a full 40 minutes. And that has been the problem for the Marquette Golden Eagles. It's bigger than that for me, though. And we're talking about what's wrong. What's wrong for me, big picture, is that this Marquette team lacks a definitive identity. There's no identity here. I think back to Buzz Williams' days in Milwaukee as the head coach of the Marquette Golden Eagles. Those teams, to a fault, were tough. That was the identity. they didn't have a necessarily specific on-the-floor identity. They weren't great three-point shooting teams, or they weren't going to bang you down low, or they weren't going to be super strong defensive teams. It didn't matter. They were just tough. They were gritty. They were tough. They were going to find a way to win the basketball game, however it needed to be won on a game-to-game basis. Early in Wojo's tenure, like it or not, the identity was prolific three-point shooting. I mean, we even saw Marquette, Kevin, put Swish U on t-shirts that they sold at the Spirit Store.
You're right.
So that was the identity that the entire university tried to embrace in the first couple of years of Wojo's tenure. Really, I mean, through last season, because Marcus was there. And we went from Matt Carlino in Wojo's first year to Andrew Rousey to Sam Hauser and Marcus Howard and Joey Hauser to definitively Marcus Howard. And the identity was, we're going to shoot the lights out from three and hope to beat you that way. This year, they're not prolific offensively at anything. They're certainly not prolific defensively. They're not super tough.
And they were prolific defensively early on in the year, and I think that's the most frustrating part.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that was a smokescreen playing against inferior opponents and maybe other college basketball programs lacking the summer training and things of that nature. I don't know how much that was. It hasn't turned out to be real.
No.
So that is a problem that I think Wojo has to address, not just for the rest of this season if Marquette wants to turn things around, but going forward, is what's the identity here? What are we trying to be? Are we playing through DJ Carden? Is he the star? Are we playing through Dawson Garcia? What are we doing defensively? Like, from a game to game, I don't know how to explain what they're trying to do, and they're having a bit of an identity, more than a bit of an identity crisis this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's far beyond that now, right? You lose three in a row to games that you probably should have taken two out of three at least, maybe all three.
Yes.
In my opinion, the problem with this team, it stems off of what you said with identity for sure, because they don't have a specific guy who's making your plays. This was the same argument I brought up in the first podcast was, who's your closer?
Mm-hmm.
Who's your three-point shooter? Who are you going to run your offense through? We didn't know. We didn't know if it was going to be Samir Torrence. We didn't know if it was going to be Kobe. We didn't know if it was going to be DJ. And as the season went on, that answer became overwhelmingly DJ Carden.
Yeah.
But then you see these last two games, or two out of the last three, you see Kobe taking the last shot and just blowing it, just slipping and falling on the inbounds pass, and then missing a layup when he's barely contested at the rim. He missed it off the backside of the backboard. Like, wasn't even close.
It's interesting, too, because I totally agree with you. Over the course of the season, DJ has been the guy that they're trying to run the offense through,
right? It should have been.
And I totally agree. But there are stretches of games where he disappears. I don't know if it's because they want to try and get other guys involved more, but it seemed to me, especially against St. John's, Kevin, that DJ Carden really started to turn things on late in the second half. Like, he was invisible in the first half. And then they realized, oh, crap, this is who we are, right? So it gets back to identity of, like, I don't care what your identity is. Just figure it out and go with it. Because this wishy-washy trying to figure things out as we flip the calendar to February is crazy.
Right,
and
you're not going to get anywhere in a conference like the Big East, especially when you're right in the middle of the pack in almost every offensive category. Three-point shooting, they're right in the middle. They're at six, and that's a huge problem for me too. You got shooters on this team.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the execution? What are we doing in practice? What's this? Again, the Kobe McEwen should be an electric three-point shooter. He should be a better shooter than he is this year. He had all the time last year to improve on that. He drives the lane. He's athletic. Why can't he shoot? DJ Carden, same thing. Why doesn't he have the ball in his hands late in the game? Dawson Garcia's got a nice stroke. He's been playing well. He's probably been overall defensively, offensively, inside out. He's probably been, their best player. But when you don't have the consistency, Greg Elliott off the bench is just a roller coaster. When he comes in and he's red hot, he gives you that energy, and God love him for it. But there's just some games he comes in there and just brick, miss. Then Jamal comes in, and they call it Kane's Corner.
Yeah.
Cool, that's fun. But, like, make more of them, please.
Yeah, it's frustrating inconsistency. That's That's the prettiest way I could describe the 2020-2021 Marquette Golden Eagles into the month of February. Now, the good news is they have a couple more opportunities to earn Quadric 1 wins and get themselves back into the NCAA tournament picture. But is that already out of the question? Is it too late? We'll get to that next on Championship Blue.
So when we're talking about teams that are going to be in the tournament right now, if the season ended tomorrow, if we're talking about teams we're going to be in, we're talking about Villanova. They're still undefeated in the conference. Far and away the best coach team, far and away the best team. You got Creighton coming up right behind them. They're a shoe-in, too. They were top 10 for a part of the year. They're 9-3. You got Xavier. They're going to be in. Then you got UConn and Seton Hall. I think those five I'm comfortable with saying that, and with Seton Hall kind of, you know, they're kind of dwindling. But I would, right now I'm taking those five to be in shoe-in. Now, are they going to take some time off and not participate in Madison Square Garden in a month?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that in a couple of minutes because I think that could be incredibly impactful when it comes to Marquette's conference championship hopes. But just looking at Marquette's resume right now, I think you nailed it there. Those are the five Big East teams that are certainly in consideration. And you're right, Seton Hall is slipping big time. They've lost three games in a row, just like Marquette has. But they also have two big quadrant one wins already. They're 9-8 overall. They're currently 57th in the net ranking. So they're still very narrowly inside. And obviously that's a talented basketball team that we expect to be able to turn things around. Marquette, where would you guess they are ahead of, we're recording this on Tuesday ahead of the Butler game at home. Where would you guess they are in the net rankings?
Like overall, all teams?
Yes.
I'd probably put them 100 to 130 in that
93rd.
Range.
93rd, which obviously is very clearly outside looking in. Right? You're looking at, and it's not just based on the net rankings 1 through 68. If it was, that would make things incredibly easy for the selection committee, and shoot, they should probably do that. But it gives you a good basis of how teams are ranked, where they're stacking up in terms of tournament time. Marquette very clearly on the outside looking in with work left to do. Now, they do have two quadrant one wins. Which is big over Wisconsin, who, by the way, is slipping up and not making that win look as impressive as it probably would have at the time over a top five team.
Classic Wisconsin, not helping us out.
Screwing us over, as they always do. And then they've got the road victory over Creighton, which is a good victory. They have some more opportunities. They have Creighton coming up this weekend at home. That's gigantic. And then, luckily, the Villanova game that got postponed has been rescheduled for the middle of next week. So they do have two more opportunities to win quadrant one games, which is helpful. And obviously, Marquette cannot have hiccups against other inferior opponents, like in today's game against home against Butler. St. John's again, DePaul again on the road, you can't lose. So there are these games you can't have hiccups. You have to stack victories down the stretch if you want to work your way back into the picture. But at this point, it seems to me, Kevin, and I'm comfortable saying this, I think the only route to the NCAA tournament this year, based on the way Marquette is playing, is winning three straight in New York City. It's that simple.
And I don't disagree with you. I think if you look, if you start with today's game against Butler, if you start today, and this, I don't think they've ever had a winning streak like this in the Wojo regime. I don't expect it to happen, but if you can go out and win your last eight games, I think then we can start talking maybe 6-2, 8-0, 7-1, somewhere in there. Yeah, they're not going to win their last eight. Let that's a pipe dream, but you get to that object. Once you get to that option, now you can start thinking about, okay, yeah, I think this team's the tournament team.
So they've got nine left because on the current schedule they haven't inserted Villanova yet. I think they have to get to six with at least a win over Creighton or Villanova.
You absolutely have to win one of those.
If you get to that, you're back flirting with the bubble, right? If you win six games and two of them are over Creighton and Villanova, you're probably, barring where your losses are, you're probably very narrowly in, right? But even if you beat Creighton and Villanova and you lose to DePaul again, that's going to be a tough sell.
It's curtains.
Right? So it obviously is based upon who you're playing and who you're beating down the stretch. I think the point here is Marquette does have an opportunity to turn things around. There's a lot of basketball left to be played, but they've given us no indication over the last 2 weeks that they're capable of stringing together 6 of 9 wins in Big East Conference play. The last two seasons, especially in February and March, give nobody confidence that they're going to be able to win down the stretch because there have been far more talented Marquette teams the the last two seasons that have stumbled down the stretch in big-time moments and hurt their seeding in the NCAA tournament picture.
Right.
So as it stands, I think it's fair to say the easiest route is going to be win three in New York City. Now, on the other side here, on Championship Blue, that sounds obviously like a tough sell, but could it be a little bit easier this year because teams might be protecting themselves from COVID-19?
I mean, if I'm a program like Villanova, I'm not going to speak for them, but if I'm like them, I have nothing else to prove. I know I'm the powerhouse of the conference. I've been there. I've done this. I've done that. I've produced pro talent. I've won the Big East tournament a couple times the last 5 years. I'm good. I don't know if I'm playing, and then maybe it starts to snowball.
Let's dive further into this next on Championship Blue.
So if you're Jay Wright and the Villanova Wildcats and you're sitting where you are right now, you know, they got quite a few games left, but currently undefeated in the conference, going to make the tournament. Are you sitting out this tournament, the Big East tournament in a month?
Yes, very simply.
I think I am too.
Joe Lenardi of ESPN.com, expert bracketologist. I love that Lenardi created a job for himself. That's fantastic. And it's great. I'm sucked in every time.
How can he be an expert? It's like me when I say on Twitter like that I'm a self-proclaimed sports gambling expert.
Perfect.
Like, how can you be an expert on tournament picks? Anyway.
It's neither here nor there. Villanova's the number one seed. That's where Lenardi has him right now. Like,
They're really good.
What do I have to gain? Nothing. And what I have to lose by not playing in the Big East Conference tournament is two things. Number one, maybe a couple seed lines. Maybe you drop to a two, maybe a three at worst, right? But that's not the end of the world for a program like Villanova. They don't care who they play in the first couple of rounds. Like, they're going to get through the probably Sweet 16 with ease, and then you're going to play good teams regardless. So they don't really give a crap who they're playing in the first couple rounds. The biggest thing that teams like Villanova, and by the way, this isn't just a Big East thing. This is a across the country thing. These top tier teams have to make a real serious decision about safety coming into tournament time, because the health and safety protocols surrounding the NCAA tournament this year are incredibly, incredibly strict. You have to have 7 consecutive days of negative tests for your team in order to participate in the NCAA tournament. So they're doing the whole thing in the bubble in Indianapolis. And if I'm playing an NCAA tournament game on a Thursday, right, that first Thursday, first and second round games, for the Big East or the Big Ten or some of these other conferences, those conference championship games are being scheduled less than a week prior to those first round games. They take place that previous Sunday for the Big Ten, Saturday night for the Big East.
Wow, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So who's to say that somebody might contract COVID in a Big East semifinal or a Big East final, test positive on Tuesday of tournament week, and all of a sudden I can't go, right? So it almost makes more sense to me for a Villanova or a Michigan or a Gonzaga to say, I got nothing to gain by playing in my conference tournament. I'm opting out. I'm not playing. Dock me a seed line or two if you want to. I don't care. I'm going to go with my team, test, stay in Indianapolis, quarantine there, and see where the chips may fall on Selection Sunday and go play some basketball.
Like, right.
I think you're going to see some of that stuff throughout the country. Now, the Big Ten has already adapted, Kevin, because the Big Ten was supposed to have its conference tournament in Chicago. They moved it to Indianapolis.
Yep.
Hello? Why do you think they did that?
<Da-da-da>.
Right? It makes sense. So I think Big Ten teams are probably going to be safe at this point. But for other conferences that can't do that, I'm curious to see how they're going to adapt. And now, Kevin, you can talk about how this might benefit Marquette if we get Nova or Creighton or Seton Hall or UConn or all of the above opting out of the tournament, all of a sudden an automatic big becomes a little bit more likely.
We'll see. But before I get to that, though, do you think there's some integrity with these coaches? Maybe they have like a, hey, no, you got to play. Maybe we got this niche group or their consequences. It's things like that where you think you'll get fined a little bit. Your program will get fined or docked a little bit maybe by not participating. But because it's COVID times, maybe not. Maybe they'll just let it slide.
That's the thing. Like, who in their right mind is going to be like, why, you idiots? Yeah,
true.
I can't believe you're keeping your players safe ahead of the NCAA tournament. Like, who's going to say that? Now, I do think getting docked a seed line or two on Selection Sunday, probably just a seed line, two seed lines is like 8 or 10 spots. I think that's within the realm of possibility. Like, oh, you didn't play this week, and another team overtook you because they did. That makes sense to me, and that's totally fair. But I think over the course of a season, Gonzaga and Baylor and Michigan, they've proven they're worthy of one seeds, right? So maybe you see this jostling on the 2 and 3 lines when it comes to Selection Sunday. But quite frankly, I don't think those schools give a crap. Like, they want to play. There's money to be made. They want to be able to compete in the NCAA tournament for the first time in 2 years now because last year's got canceled. So I think there might be some backlash in the court of public opinion from, you know, radio hosts and the like saying, these kids want to play. You should go out and play and risk it. That's ridiculous. Well, they have their eyes on the big prize.
Right, and I think that's smart. We'll obviously see what happens there, but this benefits Marquette in a lot of different ways because, you know, just we've seen it in other sports too where, you know, games are getting canceled in some team's favor or different things. Some people enjoy playing without fans. That helps. Let's say this team finishes right where they are right now. I believe they are sitting in the 8th seed in the Big East at 4-7 in conference, 8-9 overall. My prediction with the way things have been going, they'll probably finish in that 7-9 slot, depending on how things go the rest of the year. That means you're getting Villanova, Creighton, Xavier, or UConn at the beginning.
Right.
Villanova opts out. Okay. So then you're looking at probably Xavier, Connecticut. You should have beat UConn earlier this year. It's a much better matchup for you.
Should have beat Xavier. They beat you on a buzzer beater. And you gave up 91 points in that game.
Yeah,
right?
What was that, 91-88, I think? Yeah, it was like a super close game. So obviously you want to do your all to avoid Villanova. So if they're out of this thing completely, you're right. You win those three straight games. It gets a lot easier because your path becomes then Creighton. You know, maybe get another opportunity with St. John's, who's actually, they got some offensive talent on that team.
They really do.
I mean, they.
Champagne's a beast. He's one of the best players in the conference.
I think he's the leading. Leading scorer in the conference.
He was at 19.7
crazy, yeah,
per game before the Marquette game, and I think he scored 23. So he's probably over 20 now.
He's a little over that, yeah. So, like again, if we get to this point where we're seeing where teams are opting out, I mean, if you're a Marquette fan, you should be thanking your lucky stars because I'm not rooting for. How do I phrase this? I'm not rooting for teams to opt out. You always want to play the best competition.
Yes.
But, like, if they're actually opting out because they're a team like Villanova that could capture their third national championship in the last decade, okay, you get it. Like, that does not happen every day. It's more important than a conference championship, and I would totally understand.
Now, the thing that hurts Marquette here, Kevin, because we have to bring that up as well, is if some of these teams opt out, it's less opportunities if you don't win the Big East tournament to get wins over quality teams, right? So if you get to the Big East championship game and lose, oh, no, you've beaten, you know,
yeah,
nobody. You've beaten nobody on the way to the conference tournament game.
They'll finish with those two quad one wins, right.
And that's it, right?
See you later.
It's give and take here, but it's going to be something interesting to keep our eye on to see how the NCAA and how the conferences in particular address this down the stretch, because I think it's something that they're going to have to deal with towards the end of this month.
And it's just, you just go back to how frustrating it is when you have losses to DePaul. You have losses like St. John's on Sunday, and then you have that loss to you guys. Like, that's Big East play, though, right? Like, this conference is historically competitive. The last few years, there's been a ton of 1-2 possession wins. You just wish you could have had a couple of those back. You really do.
100%. So we'll see how things shake out down the stretch here. We're going to do a couple more pods before the end of the Big East season, and we'll see if Marquette can play their way back into things for the early portion of March. They got 4 or 5 weeks here to turn things around before Selection Sunday.
Yeah, let's switch gears. Kind of see what our brethren are up to in the NBA.
Alumni.
Next. Yeah, next on Championship Blue. So let's take a look right now at some of our NBA alumni playing in the league and playing pretty well in the league.
Yeah, it's a good time to do this. We're more than a couple of months into the NBA season now. Teams are starting to settle in, and you're starting to see who's who and what's what. So it's a good time to take a look and see how the blue and gold alums are doing in the league.
We need a name for this segment, too. So if you have any, feel free to comment on some of our social media pages. Give us a follow.
Old guys.
Yeah, just old guys?
I like old guys.
Okay, we got old guys. Any votes for old guys?
Nope, no
Looking
votes.
Looking around.
Yeah, nobody's raising their hands.
But okay, we'll have a name for this
guys.
By the next time.
Yeah.
But kind of glancing around, Jimmy didn't play much at all to start the year. He was out. He's come on strong these last two games. He's looking great, and it's good to see because the Heat are a really good basketball team, and they're sitting in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference, and that was without, you know, Jimmy and Hero were out for a little bit, but Jimmy, 34 minutes, 37 minutes, back-to-back games, and dude looks like he's back to his old self. Triple doubles in almost both those games.
Yeah, putting up big numbers. 37-8 in his first game, 25-9-5 with four steals in his second game. Like, he's going to be fine. Then
he's a beast.
Yeah, it was so fun to watch him lead that Heat team to the NBA Finals last year. And I get that it was at the expense of the Milwaukee Bucks, but it was the first dominant performance from a Marquette player at an elite level since D-Wade, right?
Oh, yeah.
And not even necessarily D-Wade in the big three Heat days. Like, it was more reminiscent for me, Kevin, of D-Wade in 2006, just putting that Heat team on his back and carrying them to an NBA championship. And Jimmy Butler damn near did that. Like, nobody expected that Heat team to be in the finals, let alone take the Lakers to six and within a whisker of seven. That's exactly what happened. So he is the leader of that team. Like, you can talk to me about whoever else you want on the Heat. That's Jimmy Butler's team now. He wanted it to be Jimmy Butler's team, and now they have him back. And you said they are at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, and they are. They're struggling out of the gate. That's because they didn't have their star.
Yeah, missed, what, 10 games?
Like, yeah. I mean, imagine where Giannis would be, where the Bucks would be if Giannis was out for a significant period of time. Probably in the same spot that the Heat are, right? So good to see Jimmy back and healthy and playing like the player that we all know he can be and that we saw him blossom into late in his time at Marquette.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy that played with Jimmy, Jay's playing pretty well right now himself, and I didn't even realize he was getting like 30 minutes a game off the bench for Phoenix. That Phoenix team's an interesting one because they're a team that's like, all right, when are they gonna? They got all the pieces, they got their team, they got their young guys, they got their all star in Chris Paul, they got a great rebounder, interior defender, they got a great bench. They just right now they're kind of fluctuating around the 500 mark, kind of up and down. But Jay's played really well for them off the bench. Great, solid role player. I mean, like you said, almost 29 minutes a game. I mean, he's a valuable piece to that Suns team.
He is, speaking of huge pieces to the Heat run last year, I mean, Jay Crowder was gigantic. He was huge off the bench for them in terms of getting to the NBA Finals, and a lot of it was three-point shooting. And he's only shooting about 34% from three this year. I think that number can be a little bit higher. He's shown that he's capable of that number being a little bit higher than it is. Phoenix is such a frisky team, too, because late last season, in the bubble, they came within a whisker of actually making the playoffs. If you remember correctly, in the eight play-in games, they were the last place team.
They went undefeated, right?
They won all eight games and still missed out. It sucks. It was terrible. They won all eight and still missed out on actually making the playoffs, but they're carrying some really positive momentum, and Paul and Booker and Ayton are fun pieces. So that could be a team getting into the Western Conference playoffs that, you know, they're 11-8 right now. If they sneak in, they could give somebody real trouble in the first round, especially because they have some confidence after last year. Like right now, as it stands, and this won't turn out to be the case, the 3-6 matchup, if it ended today, would be Lakers-Suns. That'd be kind of crazy. And, I imagine the Lakers will probably pull
away
over the course of the year.
Yeah.
But you know who doesn't want to see the Suns in the first round? How about the LA Clippers, who have just had playoff woes forever, right? The Suns would be a fun matchup and give a lot of top teams in the West headaches come playoff time, and Jay Crowder can be a huge piece in terms of coming off the bench and contributing in a similar fashion that he did for the Heat last year.
And it's funny when we think about team comparisons and teams struggling for identities. We're talking about Marquette to begin this podcast. Phoenix, honestly, they look like a team struggling for an identity right now. Is it Ayton? Are they going to go defensive? The guy's an unbelievable rebounder and great interior defender. Is it going to be shooting? They just seem to be a team that's kind of trying to find their wings at the moment, just like this Golden Eagle team.
Yeah, and it's so obvious from the outside looking in that you need to play through Devin Booker. Like, you have a guy that scored 70 in an NBA game. He needs to be your identity for everything that you do, and I think he eventually will be, and you're right, they are having a bit of an identity crisis right now, but when push comes to shove, I think you have to rely on your stars in the NBA, and the star there, it's as much as they want it to be former number one overall pick, DeAndre Ayton, it's Devin Booker. He is the star. He's the guy that needs to get you where you want to go, and you have to live and die with that person.
Staying in the Western Conference, one of the best teams in the Western Conference, one of the most complete teams in the NBA, in my opinion, the Denver Nuggets. Marcus Howard, not playing a whole lot, which was expected, undrafted. He's playing behind, again, one of the most complete teams in the league, so you would expect that this is going to be a player that, you know, he's got to get his licks in practice, he's got to get his licks in when he's, you know, the last two, 3 minutes of every game, but he's not going to find his career in Denver. No. I mean, it's just not that, and we knew that kind of going in. It's just not going to happen there because of the guys that are in front of him. With Harris, Dozier, Jamal, I mean, all those guys are playing so well to start the year. And they have an MVP candidate in Jokic. Jokic.
They've got a super fun backcourt they have for the last couple of years. To Marcus's credit, when he is getting in, he's taking advantage of the 2 or 3 minutes that he's getting per game. They played the Heat in the middle of last week. He hit 2 3-pointers and had 2 assists in 3 minutes at the end of the game.
Step back is just deadly. Have you watched a couple of those highlights? It's great.
Yeah, and if you're getting 3 minutes per game and you score 6 points and get 2 assists, you're making the most of your 3 minutes out there, right? You get 180 seconds, right? That's all you're getting. Marcus seems to be making the best out of the minutes, as limited as they are, that that he's receiving at this point. He's controlling what he can control, and you can only hope that whether it's with Denver at some point in the future or somebody else, he can just show up on tape enough that teams in the NBA continue to want to take a chance on him.
And that's the thing, is I think that Marcus is going to get a shot. I knew kind of when he was his junior year, I was kind of looking at him. I'm like, I think this kid will get a shot in the league just from his shooting standpoint and the way the NBA is transitioning. But overall, you know, good on him. Continue to make the most out of those minutes. I don't think he's going to get his shot with the Nuggets just because they're one of the best teams in the league. They're constructed well. They don't need him to play big minutes yet. But he's going to get a shot somewhere. Some team that needs a three-point shooter off the bench, I mean, that's going to be his bread and butter. Let's look around. We got anybody else that we're kind of glancing at? I want to give some love to Sakaar Anum.
Yeah.
Sakaar Anum picked up by a G League team down in Florida. I'm trying to find the name of it.
G League teams are like minor league baseball teams. They should all have really cool baseball caps.
I know it had Caliente in there, and that was like,
really?
Ooh, okay.
Ooh, ha-ha.
Let's see here.
Where the hell are you, Sakaar? Ah, the Agua Caliente Clippers. Very nice for Sakaar Anum. Well earned, well deserved. That wasn't a guy that was highly recruited out of high school. Obviously developed his game a ton in his time at Marquette, Kevin. I don't think there were huge expectations on him his freshman year. And he blossomed into a star at Marquette, one of the better players in the Big East Conference, the second best player on the team his senior year behind Marcus Howard. He was a stud offensively, reliable offensively, and then a great defensive player that Marquette has certainly missed this season. But it's cool to see him work hard and get his chance with the Agua Caliente Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, it's the type of blue-collar player that you love to see getting his shot.
Yeah.
We'll see if it blossoms into something, but the guy deserved a shot in the G League. He was really good, and this was a good pickup by the Clippers. I know that there were other G League teams monitoring him just from other friends of mine that, you know, have worked with Marquette Athletics and were, you know, they had been talked to by G League teams about, hey, should we take a flyer on Sakaar Anum? So I know he was in demand. I know other teams were asking for him. But I'm glad to see, regardless, that he has, you know, he's got a place now to actually play basketball. And I'm excited to see where he goes. We'll obviously the G League, there's no G League season this year.
Yep.
But now at least that's a monkey off your back. You can focus on your training. You can move down there, get acclimated with the area, and then begin to kind of get back into the basketball routine.
Yeah, and the G League can be a proving ground for players, right? We've seen it before, especially with Marquette players. I think about Vander Blue just prolonging his basketball life by being a beast in the G League. I think he's the second all-time G League leading scorer in the history of the G League, which is crazy.
Wow. But I didn't know that.
I'm going to look that up, too, just to check.
That's nuts.
All-time G League scorers. He may have even gotten number one. But regardless, I think you can prolong your career, and it's not just Vander Blue level players. Christian Wood was in the Bucks organization for a while, bopping around in the G League with the Wisconsin Herd, and now he is featured in Houston, if I'm not mistaken, right? He's down there crushing.
Yeah,
he
might be an all-star this year.
Yeah.
He is just – you talk about a guy that – the Bucks really screwed up cutting.
No kidding.
I mean, they obviously didn't need him for their current role, but I mean, he's an absolute monster.
Vander Blue, 4,845 points all time in the G League. That is the second most all time behind Ronaldo Mayor, 5,058 points. So, Van, if he would have stuck around for like one more season, he probably would be the all time G League leading scorer. He's also top 10 in assists and games played. Nice, man. Very nice.
I ran into him once at a Marquette game when the Lakers were in town playing when they were playing the Bucks. This is at the BMO. And I remember I was sitting courtside with my camera doing some game film for the Marquette Wire, and one of my buddies, like, hit me on the arm, and I'm like, dude, Marcus is shooting. Relax. And he goes, dude, Vander Blue's back there. Let's go get an interview. And I'm like, all right, sure. So, you know, I went and talked to him. Cool guy.
We'll end this with another Vander Blue story. I also had a run-in with Vander Blue, not in a basketball environment. I was flying back from visiting my sister in Baltimore. So I'm at BWI, getting on my flight from Baltimore to Milwaukee. And, you know, Southwest does the whole lineup thing in the line, right? You have to line up 1 through 15, 16 through 30, yada, yada. So I get in my line. I'm like B28 or whatever it is. And Vander Blue gets in line right in front of me at BWI. I'm
nice.
Like, first of all, screw you. You're one spot ahead of me. I should have registered or, like, you know, checked in for my flight earlier. I would have been ahead of you. But he was sitting in the exit row. On the Southwest flight, because he's obviously a little bigger. So there was a moment on that flight where I thought, listen, if we go down, my life is in the hands of Vander Blue.
Did he let you down? You're still here?
Thank God we didn't. You know, the plane didn't crash, and we never got to that. So, but
thank you, Vander Blue.
Thank you for.
I really needed this podcast for my career, so thank you for unintentionally helping me.
Yes, and thank you, Vander, for offering to open up the exit door on the wing of that Southwest flight 3 years ago.
And not to be outdone, Wesley Matthews for the Lakers right now. A little bit of a step back for him from last year. He hasn't played the last couple games, but. Struggling, obviously, he's not going to be a focal point of that offense. Obviously, the points are going to be down. And then Juan Toscano-Anderson for Golden State.
Oh, my God.
He was a part of the
biggest NBA story of the week.
Yeah, we almost forgot about Juan Toscano-Anderson. You know, the Warriors, you know, they're a team that's really interesting, and Toscano's actually getting some minutes with them just because they are, you know, without Clay, they are a little bit shorthanded in the backcourt, and he's going to get some more minutes. But, you probably have a better, you know, what's your Juan? You watched him play more than I did. So.
Yeah, so Juan, I never expected to be an NBA player.
Neither did I.
But my memory of Juan was he stuck around for Wojo's first year. I think his senior year was Wojo's first year. And they had like eight eligible players. Like literally eight players on scholarship. And they started winning basketball games, even though they weren't very good, Wojo's first year, which how could you expect them to be when you transfer? And Juan Anderson, after every press conference he did, would end his press conferences. You know how Russell Wilson does the go Hawks thing, like, go Hawks when you sign it off? Juan Anderson would end it with eight strong because they only had eight scholarship players. Whenever they would win or lose, he would tag his press conferences with eight strong. So, you know, even with 6 or 7 or 8 years retrospect now, I think Juan Anderson had a big role in the continuity of this program early on and building whatever identity Wojo's program has at this point. Juan Anderson was a huge part of the biggest NBA story of the week this week. He got into some sort of verbal tussle or got in the way of a verbal tussle with Rodney Magruder that led to that Draymond Green, Rodney Magruder post-game rant. So shout out to Juan Anderson for making an impact on and off the floor in the NBA.
Good on him, man. Really good on him. Funny thing about this, I pulled up his stat page because I wasn't sure how he was doing. And it has an ad to go watch the Warriors and Spurs in person.
Yeah,
$99 bucks a ticket.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to getting back in the arena when it's safe in a few months.
So was courtside Karen at that Lakers-Hawks game.
Oh, good Lord.
She got booted. But that's a song for another pod.
Thanks for joining us today, guys. You can find us Wisconsin On Demand, the new rollout. Brian's got all the details on that one. And then, again, you can find us on social media. Find us on Twitter, at Championship Blue. You can follow us on Twitter as well. Thanks for joining us.
And go Marquette.